Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters. The Top Cat is out on some well-deserved rehab duty, but we're both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we've got a great show coming up for you. But first, we want to thank some of the sponsors that helped make the show possible, including the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, the Charlie Wilson Agency, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, Daphne's Hottest Place for Chow, the waterfront restaurant at One Yacht Club Drive. The Medicare lady, Miss Keisha Chambers, we're going to be speaking with her here in just a moment. And Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And of course, we'd like to thank all of our sponsors and you, our great listeners, because we could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And of course, SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always jump into the discussion on Facebook for more information on the topics of the day. Coming up later on SBN, we'll be joined by one of our C lawyers from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, Miss Laura Holland. She'll get us up to speed on the legal issues facing our veterans today. And of course, Tom's tirade on Black Hawk Down to Benghazi. It's a classic that you don't want to miss. But first, it is always a pleasure to be joined on SBN by a great supporter of our veterans, the Medicare lady, Ms. Keisha Chambers. Keisha, welcome back to SBN, and thank you for your support for our veterans.
Well, thank you for having me on tonight. And I just want to give a shout-out to all our veterans, and thank you for your service as well.
Well, it certainly... great to hear that. That's what we're here for. And of course, you put the money, your money where your mouth is, because you also are the commander of Unit 45 Loxley DAV Auxiliary. So you're active in the veterans community and want to thank you for that. But you are also, I guess, what you could call a Medicare expert.
I am. I'm a Medicare advisor. I specialize in Medicare, Medicaid, and veteran benefits. And so basically what I do is I help people who are eligible for Medicare to find extra benefits, ways to save money, and get the best health care that they can possibly get.
Outstanding, outstanding. And I know there are some tricky parts when you try to put all that together. Between Medicare, All the different parts of Medicare, and then you get into Medicare Advantage and Medicare supplements, and then you throw in if someone is a veteran, then it can get even more complicated. So it's always good to have someone with your type of knowledge to be able to walk that veteran, and I'm sure their families as well, through that maze that can be Medicare. But tell us, sort of give us the broad overview of how a veteran how you work with a veteran when it comes to, say, Medicare Part A and Part B.
So when a veteran becomes eligible for Medicare, they may also be eligible for VA benefits. They may have TRICARE for Life, or their spouse may have CAMP VA. If they are a 100% disabled veteran, spouses can qualify for CAMP VA. And so with these Advantage plans, there's a lot of ins and outs, but basically the Advantage plans help a veteran whether they have any of those benefits or if they just have Medicare. The plans usually don't have a premium, or they have very low premium. The Advantage plans give you extra benefits like dental, vision, hearing, gym membership. But one of the biggest benefits for veterans about these Advantage plans is that some of the plans now have what's called a give back benefit. So for anyone who has Part A, you don't pay for that once you're 65, but Part B does have a premium, and for the average person, it's around $202. And these plans, some of them pay or give a credit towards the Part B as much as $185 a month, which is amazing because that brings your cost way down for your insurance. And then you get all the other benefits on top of it. And so that's one thing that I help individuals do, is find these plans that can give them a little bit more help and make those dollars stretch a little bit further.
Now, I know you mentioned, you've mentioned, Medicare Part A and Part B, but you've also mentioned the Medicare Advantage. Can you just give us sort of a very brief distinction between the two? Because some folks, they might hear a lot of it on TV during the annual enrollment period, but they may not quite understand.
Okay. So while you're working, you're paying into the system for Part A. That covers hospital, skilled nursing facility, institutions, and hospice. And then Part B is everything else: emergency care, doctors, tests, outpatient surgery, medical equipment, and so on. So that's what original Medicare is. When someone enrolls in a Medicare Advantage plan, they're basically enrolling in a plan that's administered by a private company. And they don't lose their benefits for A and B. The benefits come through the plan. And so they're getting a plan that by law has to have as good a benefit as A and B, but it can be better too. And so these companies over the years have really done a good job with adding extra benefits to the Medicare Advantage plans. Like I said, the dental, vision, hearing, the give back programs. And then these plans can also include drug coverage, the Part D. But there are certain plans that some veterans choose that don't have the Part D coverage because they have TRICARE for Life and they have Express Scripts.
Right. Okay.
But recently, in the last, couple of years, these companies have been working with veterans, and so you can actually have a double layer of drug coverage. You can have your Express Scripts, but you can also add a Part D plan through an Advantage plan like this, and you would have the same scenario for TRICARE where you have a primary payer, and then you have the secondary payer, bringing your cost down to as low as zero.
Well, and that is always... That is always a good thing, especially when it comes to prescriptions these days. Now, we got a little less than a minute, but you also mentioned that if you're a veteran, you may qualify for a special enrollment period.
That's true. Veterans can, if they have VA, CHIP, or TRICARE for Life, they can actually enroll every month, and it'll start the very next month. And so if they have any questions, they can reach out to me, and I can explain all this in more detail, help them understand the enrollment process and how they would benefit. They can call me at 251-401-3923. 251-401-3923.
That sounds great. Well, Keisha, thank you so much for being on with us and sort of breaking some of that down so that hopefully our veterans have a better understanding of it. And of course, give Miss Keisha a call if you'd like additional information, because she can walk you through the process and really advise you and assist you in finding what plan is going to be best for you.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. Transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And if you like to listen on demand, you can catch our regularly aired programs via podcast on the FM Talk 106.5 app for your media devices. And Tom's Tirade is up on castbox.fm if you want to get your blood pressure going. And it's always a privilege to be joined on SBN by one of our legal eagles from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Ms. Laura Holland. Laura, welcome back to SBN, and thank you for your service to our veterans.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always fun and a good time to speak with you guys.
Well, it is great to have you on. I know that you and all of the attorneys there at Gardberg and Kimberly do a fantastic job in advocating for our veterans, but one of the things that allows you to do that is by really staying one, I guess what you could call the cutting edge of that industry. And one of the ways that you do that is by attending or being a part of NOVA, which is the National Organization of Veterans Advocates. And I believe there is a conference that is coming up soon. So tell us a little bit about the organization. And I think you have a number of your attorneys that will be attending. And so, what do you look to glean from your time there?
Oh, absolutely. Our firm tries to go, they have these National Organization of Veterans Advocates conferences twice a year. And it is the National Organization of Veterans Advocates gets together. It's an organization for attorneys who represent veterans as our main focus. And it's attorneys all over the country. So we get together twice a year to go over, hear from leading experts, and even sometimes members of or people who work within the VA will come and speak with us and let us know kind of any changes that are going on. Like this year, they're going to have the VA Inspector General come and kind of let us know what's going on within the VA. But there are three of us attorneys from Gardberg and Kimberly going this spring next month. And there's always sessions that we really look forward to. The ones that I'm particularly looking forward to, there's a session on maximizing PTSD and TBI benefits. I think that one is going to be a wonderful resource because I'm not sure if you've seen this, but the VA tends to combine TBI and PTSD ratings. So this this workshop, this presentation will go deep into working with TBI and PTSD as comorbid conditions, how complicated the claims and complex those claims can get, and how to kind of separate out those overlapping factors that can be more beneficial in some instances, and potentially increase the veteran's rating by focusing on more different factors between the PTSD and the TBI. So hopefully we can get those separated out and get veterans two separate ratings instead of one combined rating. So that's one I'm really, really interested in sitting in on and learning from, and we'll be taking lots of notes on that. And then it's always, always wonderful to go in. They have several hours dedicated to legislative updates and recent court cases and how to use those. So that is something I always look forward to at every conference. And in particular, at this one, there's a big case that came out back in October, the Witkowski decision, and it relates to unemployability. And I know you know what unemployability is. It's when the VA finds that a veteran is unable to work due to their service-connected conditions. So this case really changes how the Board of Veterans Appeals can look at those. It makes it easier for the veteran. It makes it quicker for the veteran. Previously, do you mind if I give you a hypothetical of how it used to work and kind of how this case changes things?
Oh, certainly. That would probably be the best way for the veterans and their families that are listening to understand exactly how it works.
Okay, great. So unemployability, there's two ways that the VA evaluates unemployability. One is if you meet what they call the scheduler requirements. That's if you have, there's several different things that go into it, but the main one is if you have a 70% rating with at least 60% of that stemming from one condition. So say you have 30% for your back and 20% for either of your radiculopathies going down your leg, and then you're 70% overall. You meet the scheduler. But if you don't, say you have 30% for your back and 10% for your radiculopathies, but the level of pain, the level of impact that those have on you keeps you from being able to work. In that case, the VA has to send your case to the commissioner to evaluate it on an extra scheduler basis. So in this example, the veteran files for, let's say, hearing loss. His hearing loss keeps him from being able to work, but he's only service connected at 30% for hearing loss, but he cannot hear and he cannot do his job. So he files for this, files for unemployability. The regional office decided not to send the unemployability to the director of compensation, to the commissioner. So they just deny the unemployability. The veteran appeals to the board, waits 5 years for a hearing, because it is right now the board is averaging hearing cases from the 2022 appeal. So that's another story.
That actually means mine might get seen pretty soon.
Yep. If your appeal was filed in 2022, your number will probably be coming up this year. So you've waited a long time.
I've made it.
Yes. You were right there on the cusp. So this veteran, for his unemployability, he waits 5 years for his hearing. After the hearing, he waits another 2 years for his board decision, which that's a little extreme. We're not seeing quite that long of a wait for a decision, but we are seeing, a year, little over a year, waiting for a decision from the board. So under the previous law that was in effect, the board decides that they can't grant unemployability because it was not sent out for this extra scheduler consideration. So they send it back to the regional office with instructions for them to send it to the director. So over the course of the next several months, the regional office sends it to the director. The director recommends denial. The regional office denies it, and the veteran has to reappeal to the board, starting the cycle all over again. But with this new case, the board can decide on their own that whether a case meets extra scheduler. So that means faster decisions, eliminations of mandatory referral delays, better consistency in the unemployability outcomes, and a stronger access to judicial review. So this is a really big case. It can save, you know, in that hypothetical instance, it can save veterans 5-6 years of waiting for a new decision. I'm really excited to sit in on the panel on that decision to learn even more about it and more about how we can apply that in helping veterans with their unemployability cases, with how to structure our arguments to best use this case and help our veterans. So I am very, very excited about this conference. And you know, there's always a couple of things that I learned that are not written out on the schedule in advance. So there's always things that you learn just from interacting with other people who are, you know, kind of in the trenches there with the VA and kind of strategies they employ. You know, we all learn from each other. Sometimes we help them out, they help us out, and we all do our best to for the veterans that we represent, trying to get maximize benefits and make sure that every veteran is getting what they need and what they are entitled to from their service.
Well, and you know, it certainly sounds like you're going to have the ability to network with other attorneys. And is it just attorneys, or is it other folks that work with, you know, it says the veterans advocates? Is it just the attorneys that are there, or is it other interested parties?
There are other advocates who do attend these. Most of the time, you know, it's people who are certified within the VA and have their VA cards. Their, you know, the VA knows that they're representing veterans. So it does not have to be attorneys, but it is people who work with the VA, who are accredited with the VA and represent veterans in that way.
Okay. Yeah. So you won't have any of the disability sharks that are out there trying to charge people.
No. There may be a few panels on that and law changes and proposals there, but they will not be attending the conference.
Great. We're coming up on a break here, but on the other side of the break, we're going to have more with Ms. Laura Holland from Gardberg and Kimberly, and dive into some topics that some of our veterans may have seen on social media or in the news, and hopefully she can answer some questions on how that might impact their disability claims. But we will get into that when we return on The Scuttlebutt.
Hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us today on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Top Cat is out doing a little bit of recovery right now, so you're on board with Cal Walters, and we're glad that you joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. And we do want to thank the folks that helped make the show possible: the Battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, our C lawyer, Colin Kimmerly, and all the good folks at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, including Miss Laura Holland, who is with us on air tonight, Miss Keisha Chambers, Medicare lady, Daphne's newest eatery, the Waterfront Restaurant at One Yacht Club Drive, the Charlie Wilson Agency, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And as I mentioned, we are speaking with Miss Laura Holland from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly. Laura, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your service to our veterans. And, you know, prior to the break, we had talked about a number of topics that you were interested in at this conference. Now, where is the conference going to be held?
The conference is going to be held in San Diego. They move back and forth from East Coast to West Coast since we have there are members on both sides of the coast. So the spring conference is in San Diego. The fall conference will be, gosh, I can't remember. It'll be somewhere on the East Coast since it goes back and forth to make it as easy as possible for so nobody's having to cross the country every time.
Well, and it's also nice they don't have it, you know, someplace like Minnesota where it's still freezing cold at this point of the year.
So right.
That is always nice. Oh, a quick question, because you mentioned the session about PTSD and TBI.
Yes.
Are you finding that the VA looks, they're currently looking at those two as intertwined rather than two separate instances, you know, two separate conditions?
Yes, we are finding more and more that they are looking at those as a combined rating, because a lot of on the one hand, I see where they're coming from. I disagree with it, but I see where they're coming from, because a lot of the symptoms can be similar, but they're two completely different diagnoses. You know, you can have PTSD without having a TBI. You can have a TBI without having PTSD. And I just, that's something that you really, it looks like we're really going to have to start focusing in and kind of lasering in on the exact symptoms, you know, the physical symptoms, the mental symptoms, and seeing how we can separate those out. So it looks like it's going to be a long session on that, and I'm very much looking forward to that, because I want to see how, you know, how to maximize the benefits, because when those two are lumped together, I think that does a disservice to the veteran.
Well, is this going to, are there going to have to be changes at the VA when they start looking at sort of the cause and effect there from a medical perspective? I mean, obviously, legally, you can go in and argue that, hey, you know, this occurred and this occurred. But if you have the folks that are doing on the medical side of it saying, oh, it's all lumped in there together, that gives you a much steeper hill to climb.
Right. And I think one thing that we're going to really have to start doing, particularly, you know, in cases where a veteran has both diagnoses, is really focusing a lot, getting all the information from the veteran about the physical parts of the TBI, you know, headaches, and other things that impact that, not just, you know, mood swings or anger or, you know, things like that, that also come along with TBI, that can also come along with PTSD. So we're really going to have to, you know, I don't see the VA being willing to separate out the mental aspects, as far as, like I said, the symptoms of you know, mood swings, anger, things like that. I think they're always going to say, well, that's your PTSD diagnosis. So I think what we really have to do is really focus in on how those things can physically manifest, and really, you know, make sure in our briefs that we're drafting and in the way we word our applications, really make sure that the VA is focusing in on the physical aspect of the TBI, to try to raise that side and get it separated out. Because if we can show that there is a physical side, which I think for most people there absolutely is, then will be able to get a separate TBI rating and a separate PTSD rating where they're not lumping them in together, and that should raise the overall rating. So that's something that I think we're going to have to be really vigilant about, really combing through the medical records, really doing a great job or a good job of getting the information from the veterans about, you know, every single symptom that they're having, so we can make sure that the VA is aware of it, that the VA is looking at it, and that the VA is acknowledging it, in hopes that we can get those two ratings separated out, which would in turn increase the overall rating.
Well, and I may be off course here, but it would seem to me, you know, they could do the same thing with, say, military sexual trauma and PTSD. And say, well, right, you know, they're interconnected. And I don't know if they do that or not. But it would seem to me those are two very different occurrences.
And they do. They do tend to lump that in with the PTSD. So that's one that is, you know, they have a special regional office that handles the MST cases. And they typically do a pretty good job there, but they do tend to lump that in with the PTSD, and that's another thing. And that's kind of the thing with PTSD in and of itself. A lot of times it is a result of something, you know, not just observed, but something felt or some incident or injury or something like that. So we, you know, in every PTSD case, we want to be very clear on exactly, you know, the mental side of it, and then the physical side. You know, was there an injury that caused, you know, contributed to the PTSD, and do you have any physical effects still stemming from that? So in that way, we do kind of approach PTSD and really all our issues in that way, where we want to make sure we're not just focusing on one part of the issue and leaving, you know, other things on the table or leaving them off that could be something that is connected to the PTSD or but could be also be separated out in that it is a physical manifestation. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it really involves diving into the medical records, really diving into the veteran's experience. And I do know that that is such a difficult thing to discuss, to get into, and to talk about, but it is important to go into, you know, is there a physical component? Is there, you know, something else we need to be asking the VA to look at as part of this that could be separated out? And the TBI and PTSD, that's just kind of the main focus right now, because that's something that we are seeing a whole lot more now recently of the VA combining those. So it's something that's really an issue that's really, really drawing our attention. But it is something that we should always be looking at as far as, can there be other claims filed related to this? Is there a physical manifestation? Is there, you know, an injury or an event that was a part of this that we could be filing for as well, or should be filing for as well, that the VA should be looking at?
Right. Well, I'm certain you'll come back and give us sort of an after-action report on the information that you pick up there. We've only got about 30 seconds left. I know there has been a lot of talk about this new fraud initiative from the VA, but I've just recently read, you know, where they were going to be using AI to take a look at claims. But yeah, I've just recently read that they're no longer going to do that on previous claims. They're only going to be doing that moving forward. Is that correct?
I haven't heard that is a 100%. I think that they're leaning more toward that after they got a lot of pushback, because initially they were going to do a 10, looking back to ones from 2010. But I do think that they're taking a second look at that.
Okay. Well, we'll have to have you back on so we can follow up on that once we get some a little bit more definitive guidance on that. But Laura, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for all the information. Real quick, what's the phone number?
Phone number is 251-343-1111.
Great. And it's GardbergLaw.com, I believe.
That's it.
Great. Laura, thank
you
so much, and we look forward to having you back soon.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Recent headlines from Washington have had me thinking about events from this so-called dark continent. Events which saw our brave warriors on the front lines of freedom left twisting in the winds of political change and partisan expediency. Headlines that have swirled around the threats of bloc nominations in the Senate over requests for additional information over the massacre in Benghazi. The confluence of the two have caused my thoughts to drift back to an eerie similar scenario which occurred on the African continent nearly two decades ago. It was under the Clinton administration when our nation's warriors faced the specter of defeat at the hands of an unruly mob of fanatics, along with abandonment at the hands of an administration hell-bent on political expediency. For those of you who are too young to have seen it or too short-sighted to remember, the events of the Battle of Mogadishu were chronicled in the excellent book, Black Hawk Down, A Story of Modern War, and the graphically realistic movie, Black Hawk Down. Both very accurately portray the story of the events of October the 3rd and 4th, 1993, although they both conspicuously avoid any discussion of the decisions leading up to the conflict or the lack of decisive leadership from the White House during the course of the battle. The story revolves around Task Force Ranger, consisting primarily of U.S. Army Rangers from the 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, Bravo Company, 1st Special Force Operational Detachment Delta, better known as Delta Force, and helicopters from 1st Battalion, 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. Although novices of the battlefield, this group was as highly trained and motivated as any of our armed forces that we fielded at that time. The Rangers were still the Army's elite, and Delta Force was the cutting edge of the Spec Ops community. Together, they were tasked with restoring peace in the war-torn country of Somalia, which had seen its president overthrown in 1991 and his country thrown into a clan violence leading to a collapse of civil society. The U.S. found itself in Somalia after pictures of starving, fly-infested children made their way into the international community, sparking a cry for desperately needed humanitarian assistance. Soon after began the first round of using the U.S. military as a global Meals on Wheels program in an effort to ensure that food and supplies from around the world were not confiscated by the Klan warlords, specifically Mohammed Farid Adid. Although the initial surge, which included elements of the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit, met success in restoring delivery of the relief supplies, the Somalis were unable to maintain order and Adid seized power, casting the UN and U.S. as occupiers rather than peacekeeping liberators. Does that sound familiar? In the ensuing escalation, Adid and his followers began a guerrilla war with the U.S. and UN, which ultimately led to Task Force Ranger finding themselves in the house-to-house urban warfare of October 3rd and 4th, with an operation to snatch two of Adid's lieutenants, which was supposed to last no more than 30 minutes, lasted nearly 2 days, resulting in 18 Americans dead, 80 wounded, and one captured. The Battle of Mogadishu highlighted the misuse of military power by a feckless administration, both in the failure to understand the magnitude of the enemy, which resulted in an improperly deployed force structure as the U.S. was without its own heavy armor component. In a shameful display of failed leadership from the commander-in-chief, our Rangers had to fight their way out of Mogadishu, with many having to literally spring their last leg to reach a U.N. compound and what would become known as the Mogadishu Mile. The Clinton administration's subsequent decision to cut and run for Somalia rather than annihilate Adid and his followers led an obscure Islamic terrorist named Osama bin Laden to postulate that the U.S. would be defeated because his leaders did not have the stomach to fight. In 2001, he tested this theory with disastrous results. Although seen as a defeat, the Battle of Mogadishu was not without its heroes. Among them, Master Sergeant Gary Gordon and Sergeant First Class Randy Shugart, who selfishly sacrificed their lives by voluntarily inserting themselves into the crash site of a downed Black Hawk helicopter. In an eerie foreshadowing of events, nearly 20 years later on the African continent, both were killed in their efforts to defend their fellow Americans while waiting on help that would never come. Their corpses were among those shown throughout the world in the images of our soldiers' corpses being abused, burned, and dragged through the streets in the aftermath of the battle without recourse. Images that will make my blood boil and leave me saying a few choice words for the cigar aficionado in chief. I have much the same response to our current commander-in-chief on a number of grounds, none less than the massacre of Americans in Benghazi last September 11th, in which U.S. Ambassador Stevens was tortured and killed along with two Navy SEALs who volunteered to insert themselves into the consulate and were killed in their efforts to defend their fellow Americans while waiting on help that would never come. Does that sound similar? Many now believe that they were likely killed by our own damn weapons, which had been walked into Libya by the administration in support of the Islamic rebels. To date, there has been no retaliation for this act of war on the U.S. We, the American people, have yet to be told the truth of the events that day by anyone in this administration. I hope that few on Capitol Hill with the power to seek this will not give up in their quest. However, I think there is one truth that history will show. Our pivot to the Pacific and away from the Middle East, and now Africa, is unwarranted and dangerous. This administration's decision to cut and run from Afghanistan and Iraq, and its subsequent support of uprising throughout the Middle East and Africa, will only embolden the next generations of bin Ladens. Their insistence on sacrificing our military to pay for their welfare state will only serve to put our children and grandchildren at a disadvantage when facing future generations of tyranny determined to defeat the great Satan. One might think that the brutal murder of Ambassador Stevens would lead to an understanding that diplomacy just doesn't work in countries that know only mob rule, that unconditional surrender is sometimes necessary, and hey, it works. Unfortunately, our nation is sorely lacking in the leadership category in Washington these days, with politicians that are more concerned with growing their own damn power than doing what is right for this nation and its people. But that would take courage, and we seem to be led by a cult of cowardice. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Load up, sir!
Load up, sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, on 106.5 FM and streaming live at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters. Tom is getting a little R&R now. We're just a couple of Marines with just a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it, and the fighting spirit to keep it, and pull that tirade sort of out of the archives, although if you're sitting there listening to it, you might even go, wow, you know, that makes a lot of sense in today's world and in what we're currently fighting. But, you know, it even goes back to sort of that clash of civilizations that go back to our very founding. Because, you know, it was Thomas Jefferson who had to send the Marines into, you know, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. Because it was the same fundamentalists that were costing us, by some estimates, we had to pay to be able to utilize those shipping channels, and at some estimates, it was upwards of 75% of our national budget at that time. And we've been facing that entire the same situation over and over again in that area, and you know, with the actions taken by President Trump, hopefully we will be able to move that region really out of the dark ages in some area, really restore it to what was ancient Persia, which was a fantastic, very advanced civilization. And for those of you who don't know, Iran before the revolution in 79 was a very advanced culture, a very beautiful culture. And so hopefully we'll be able to revert back to a time when, you know, they didn't throw, gays, off the rooftops. But as with any endeavor, there are losses that we have to face. And, when you raise your hand, you sign that check, that blank check to say, I will go wherever. And of course, we do want to recognize the six U.S. service members who were killed in the KC-135 refueling aircraft that crashed in western Iraq. They were out of MacDill Air Force Base. Those killed were Major John Alex Klinner, Captain Ariana Savino, Tech Sergeant Ashley Pruitt, Captain Seth Koval, Captain Curtis Ungst, and Tech Sergeant Tyler Simmons. We thank them for their service. We thank them for their sacrifice. And you are remembered here. As we always say, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those that are in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We will catch you on the other side. Hoorah!